This podcast is a Uniting Heart and Soul production. Hello and welcome back to Filthy Hope, a podcast from Uniting Heart and Soul in Woollahra, where we dive into the grey spaces where Jesus, life and culture intersect. I'm your host, Jonty Cornford, Creative Director here at Uniting Heart and Soul. And joining me this week, of course, is the Reverend Vanessa Williams-Henke, Senior Pastor here at Uniting Heart and Soul. On this week's episode of the show, I interview my co-host about her career before she became a minister and about all things work-related. If you like the show, you can help us out a lot by leaving us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or just sharing it with a friend. The usual swearing warning applies. There are a handful of 4-letter words that get thrown around, but we also touch on subjects of sexual abuse and abortion in this episode, just in case you're sensitive to those things or you have kids in the car. Enjoy the episode, and I'll speak to you again at the end. Yes, how are you?
I'm good. How are you, Jonty?
I'm doing good. Having had the tables turned on me last week, it's time to switch them over again. So this week I'm going to be talking to you about faith in the workplace.
Cool.
Which I'm very excited because I know a little bit about your past and your previous career before becoming a minister, but I don't actually know a lot of detail about what that was like. So I'm excited to hear about that. Listeners that don't know, you've been a minister for how long?
7 years.
7 years. So not that long in the grand scheme of
I'm a baby.
Working brother. Life.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there's a lot of years in your life in the workplace that ministry didn't account for.
33 of them.
Yeah. So we're gonna dive into that.
Yeah.
Which I'm really excited for.
Thank you for inviting me.
Of course. But before we do that, first of all, we got to stop by it. Now, we have an episode coming out. It'll probably be the week after this, but you may not have heard it at this point. But my brother Marty came on the podcast to talk about artistry, and he loves that you request the music every time.
Oh,
so
but
when it was time for Vent Central, he'd go, "Play the music."
Yes. So are you ready?
Yeah.
Play the music, Jonty.
Hell yeah. All right, so it's my turn for Vent Central. Are you a Florence Pugh fan, the actress? Or is this a name that is unfamiliar to you?
Unfamiliar.
Okay. She was in a movie that came out recently called Don't Worry, Darling, with her and Harry Styles. Did you see online all the controversy around Harry Styles and Chris Pine and the spitting and a bunch of other stuff? So I'm not going to go into like all the detail about what did or didn't happen, because you can go online and read all about that. And the thing that annoys me is how when a movie comes out and the discourse around the movie coming out actually has nothing to do with the movie, because it just reeks to me of coming up with controversy to drum up interest in the film where otherwise it wouldn't have interest. And that's not to say it's a bad movie. I actually quite liked it. It was pretty good. But I couldn't open Facebook for a couple of days without seeing, did Harry Styles spit on Chris Pine? Did they
and
not?
That loop.
Yeah. And it just you can't escape it. And then there's a whole bunch of other stuff with Olivia Wilde, the director, and Harry Styles and Florence Pugh apparently saying that she spent half the time behind the camera directing instead of Olivia Wilde because she was off doing other things. And there's all this stuff like just going around and around and around and around in circles. And you go and see the movie and like it's fine. It's just, it's like, there's nothing amazing. It's pretty good. There's some beautiful cinematography in it. And you know, I picked the twist in within the first half of the movie.
Don't tell me because I haven't seen it.
No spoilers here. But for me, it was a relatively, not pedestrian, but a not hugely exciting or groundbreaking thriller that was perfectly enjoyable. It was good.
That. So like my, you know, kind of thing.
But you go and watch it, and all you can think about is you're trying to see the scenes where Florence Pugh was directing because Olivia Wilde wasn't there, and you're trying to see if Harry Styles is, you know, showing animosity towards anybody. Like, and the whole thing is just clouded by the media storm that comes before it, and I just get sick of it.
Was it a marketing ploy?
Well, that's the cynical like conspiracy theory about it.
Oh my god, you're saying it was cynical, buddy. Shit, Jonty.
Well, that some people would say that like none of it was real and it's all just like pre-planned marketing stuff.
Did he spit?
What's no.
You don't think?
No. Of course not. It's ridiculous. It's like, it's just bullshit that people come up with to get clicks online. Which, you know, every day I spend online is another day where I'm thinking I need to detox from this.
Unplug, brother.
Yeah. Yeah, so I mean, bit of positivity in Vent Central. Pretty good. Mm. Not nearly. I've heard and read some awful reviews that have said that it's terrible.
Mm.
It's not terrible. It's perfectly fine. So
oh, thank you.
Go and check it out.
Thanks,
John. If anything, it's not a sequel or a franchise or a reboot or it's an original script.
Love it.
So go and support movies like that. But don't take part in spreading bullshit that just distracts from the movie itself. I just get tired. I'm over it. It's so boring. Draining and boring and ugh. If that's like the most important parts of culture around arts are the controversies around the people that make it, it's like, what are we doing? Yeah, gives me the shits. Gives me the shits, Ness.
Yeah, play the music, Jonty.
So, Ness, you are obviously currently working as the minister here at Uniting Heart and Soul, but that's not all that you have done in your working career.
No.
Can you tell me a little bit about what else you've done in your
career? Sure. Yeah. So, before I was a minister, Jonty, I trained as an actor, and Mum always said to me, oh, Dahl, you need to, you know, have something up your sleeve because you're not going to earn enough money being an actor and you've got to be able to put, you know, food on the table and have a house and a car and all the stuff. You should go to typing school and learn to be a typist because this was in the 80s and that was probably Mum's paradigm. That's what girls did. They were either nurses or typists, secretaries in the day. And I said, there's no way I'm going to be a secretary over my dead body. And at the time, Jane Fonda was doing her thing on telly and a whole lot of what I call kick and giggle, you know, aerobics. And the Rankin sisters were on TV doing their, you know, sexy grapevine flick kick, easy walk moves. And I was a dancer. And I thought, I can do that. I reckon I could learn to be one of those. It's just choreography to music and with a bit of personality up the front. I think I can nail that stuff. So I was a part of the very first group to ever be trained to be aerobic instructors, 1989 in Sydney. And I think there was a group of about 25 of us. And we became aerobic instructors through this, you know, couple of weekends of training. And then I started putting my choreography together as I understood more about exercise and understanding how that worked. And then I call it audition. I think everything when you're going for job interviews an audition because I was an actor. And I landed a job and teaching aerobics. I was teaching aerobics all the way through year 12 while my friends were earning $3.25 an hour in delicatessens. I was earning $15 to teach a class. So I was earning all this incredible money and staying really fit and healthy at the same time. Then I went off and became an actor and I studied and I thought that's where I was going to be definitely going in my life. And I wasn't a Christian yet. Teaching lots of aerobics, I was teaching up to 20 classes a week. So I was paying my way through college and living at home with mum and dad and really loving being a gym instructor. That was super fun. Went off and did other courses to learn more about that and to further my understanding of exercise physiology, but it wasn't my main thrust. Drama and acting was. And then after I graduated from college as an actor and got an agent and started working, and I started in my 20s, I had a really incredible career. I was getting a lot of work and earning really good money, and I was able to say to mum, well, I didn't really need to go to typing school, did I, mum, because I've got all this money coming in. But then there was gaps of time when I wasn't earning money and I thought, I'm really glad I can teach aerobics. So it was this really lovely balance. I get married. I become a Christian. Before I become a Christian, I go off and work on a ship and singing and dancing on a cruise ship. And I come back and I start looking for more work in the fitness industry because I met a girl on the ship who was a NIDA graduate who was also working in the fitness industry. And I reached out to an organisation and started working with them, and they were phenomenal. They were called HealthWorks Corporate and they were amazing, and I loved the guy that was the director of that company, and he was a Christian and I wasn't. And I think he really spoke into my life at the time, and I, you know, thought he was a bit of a happy clapper, and he was obviously evangelizing in the workplace to me. And I would listen because I liked him and I trusted him and I valued the things that he said, and he was an incredibly intuitive, intelligent man, and I respected his opinion. And then I had friends that were becoming Christians and Hillsong was rising to fame, and then I started going to Hillsong. And in a previous podcast I've talked about my story, so I won't go there. I become a Christian and an incredibly overt happy clapper and start shoving Jesus down everybody's throat. Anyway, as life goes along, I decide there's an opportunity to be able to tender for a large corporate contract for Johnson & Johnson Pacific, the pharmaceutical company. And I have an opportunity to tender for that, and I landed the job. And I think initially I landed it because I just was bubbly and bright and happy, and I loved people, and I didn't really know anything about how to run a business at that point. But I landed this massive gig, sort of kind of talked my way into it. Remember, I had a barrister for a mother and an artist businessman as a father. So I'd grown up with self-employed people all around me. So I just thought, that's what you do. That's how you do life. You just have your own business. And I knew about leasing cars, and I knew that if you didn't know how to do accounting, you got your accountant to do it, and mum and dad just backfilled and got people to help where their skill sets weren't. So I thought, that's what you do. And mum and dad were really great guides, definitely in the early stage of that for me and the start of my business. And I surrounded myself with people that were much smarter than I was. And then I backfilled with education. Then I became a Christian. I was a Christian. And I went off and studied and became a medical exercise specialist. I went to the States and did some study over there. And medical exercise specialty was like a bridging the gap between personal trainer and physiotherapy. So there was this bit in the middle that I knew. I wasn't a physiotherapist by any means, but I had this little bit of knowledge about rehabilitation, and I could work then with physiotherapists to rehabilitate people in a gym environment along with their exercise prescription. I could guide these people quite specifically, hip replacements, shoulder reconstruction, knee replacements, all those sorts of things. And I really loved it. And so I was running the business and growing the business and doing extraordinary things in that place. But I was full of the spirit. I was absolutely on fire for God. And people would book in and see me. They would book in, make an appointment to have a fitness assessment. So they'd come in and see me for a fitness assessment in the corporate setting, and I would, you know, take their body fat and do all the girth measurements and do all the strength and flexibility and postural assessment for them and write their exercise prescription. And if I wasn't going to personally train them, one of my PTs, because I had about 15 staff working for me, they would run them through programs. And in a gym environment, you get to know people really well because, first of all, you're gathering all their medical data in a very close consultation process, and you're asking them about their family history, and you're asking them about their medical conditions and medications that they're on. And I soon realized that this process of gathering information so that I could write an exercise program and help guide these people through health and wellness journey, people were starting to really trust me and trust that I would hold their information confidentially. And I think I just had that ability to love people way back then in my early 20s. It was just an innate knowing of how to be with people, and I had a curiosity and a fascination for humanity. I loved people. I loved knowing about them, and I'm a helper. I love to help people and guide them. So I'd have these consultations and I'd guide people, and then you'd build relationship with them because you're having a huge impact on their weight, on their health, on their strength, their flexibility, their posture. In some situations they can become pain-free. So they trust you like a medical professional. And you know, a little bit like when you go to your GP, and you can often tell your GP everything that's going on, not just that you've got an itchy bum or a sore throat. I don't know why I went to itchy bum. Why do I do that? I was going so well, wasn't I? I was sounding so smart up until then. Shit. And but you can end up telling the GP all sorts of stuff that's going on in your life at the time. And I think when I look back on my life, that's what people were doing. And I don't think I really recognised it then. But I would find myself just sitting in these sessions with people, and we'd do, you know, 10 lap pull downs, a whole bunch of squats and then some planks. And then people would be on the floor, we'd be stretching, and then I'd hear how their marriage had broken down, how their child was diagnosed with leukemia, how their mother had passed away. I would start to hear this whole plethora of the human story in the gym environment. And I would just hold it. And then I'd be able to, in my next meeting with them, pick up on the conversation. I didn't have to take notes on it. I just had this ability to remember the nuance of the conversation, and then I would go away and pray for them. They didn't know I was praying for them at that time, but I would just pray for them. And I remember one situation. I was doing some postural work at an ammunition company, and there was this really scary dude that was working there. It was my first day on site, and he had to be there. It was a work health safety program, and we were a part of this program that we were running for them. And so it was mandatory that he was there. It was compulsory participation. And he sat at the back with his leather cut, big scary tattooed arms, big beard like ZZ Top, as scary as all get up, scared the shit out of me. But I had to pretend I had my act together and I wasn't intimidated by him at all. And I had to ask him to do things like stand up, pull his shoulder blades back, tuck his chin in and brace his abdominals. And we were talking about all this musculoskeletal business. And he came up to me and he said, "Love, I've got no fucking intention of doing any of this shit, okay?" I got, and he got right into my face. And I said, "Do you know what, love? I reckon you fucking do what you want to do. When you look the way you look, you can fucking do anything you want, mate. You've got my attention. Just sit down. Can I get you a Coke? Can I get you a coffee? What else can I do for you?" And he looked at me and he winked and he sat down and he did not participate. But I was really, I was cool with that. So it actually made my job easier because I didn't have to worry about that. Anyway, I was there for a period of days, and as it went on, he and I became really tight. We'd, at the break times, he'd actually gravitated to me and we would sit and chat. I ended up hearing his whole life story and how he had rescued, he'd had a really rugged past. He was a bikie, he was seriously rugged. And how he had rescued a young girl, her mother sold her for a slab of beer and he was raising her because he just thought that was not a great thing. So he would raise her and took her in as his own and was wholesome as a bikie can be, raising this girl in his home. And he told me about it and had tears in his eyes and ended up saying to me, slapped me on my shoulders and said, "I'm coming up to Sydney for the bloody New Year's Eve, love. If you ever get into any trouble, love, you know, I like you. I really like you, Ness. And I'm owed a couple of favours from my mates up in Sydney. So if you ever get into any trouble, we can call in a favour." He knew I was a Christian. I talked about God. I just got to filter in Jesus into all my conversations because I just do it and don't even know I'm doing it. I just be really authentic and honest about how I do Jesus in my life. I don't sugarcoat it. I just say it. This is who I am. I don't really give a shit what you think. This is what I think.
Yeah.
But in being that way, I sort of felt that I used to make a joke that I have I got a thing on my forehead that says, "Come and tell me all your life crap." I honestly thought that I had a sign on my back or a sign punctuated on my forehead. You know, "I will listen to your life story with empathy. I will be an empathetic witness to your crap." And I started to realise that God had wired me that way. And so people would actually book in over the years at J&J. They would book in for a consultation time into the diary. And I would think that they were coming in to have their body fat measured or their strength and flexibility reassessed and have a new exercise program. But really they would come in and tell me about the fact that their husband was bashing them or the fact that they had been sexually abused as a child or the fact that they were having trouble with their 14-year-old teenage daughter. And I would, now I know what it is that I was doing. This was way before I'd started seminary or my theology degree. I was just going to church, being a church chick. What I realised I was doing was pastoral care. And I was just able to listen and hold and pray. And I would say to the people, you know, I'm a God botherer, you know, I'm happy clapper and I go to Hillsong and I can pray for you if you want. And some would say, "Yes, please." And then I would. And others would say, "No, can you do that when I go?" And I said, "Yeah, babe, no worries. I'll do that when you go." And then word spread throughout the organisation and my business grew and I ended up with a couple of gyms. And people started to know about who I was because I would then share with people in the workplace about my life story. And when I was at college studying theology, and I would tell my spin class, because I would teach spin classes and pump classes and Pilates classes, and I would tell my people just as stories about myself, share about my life and say, "Can you believe I'm going to study? God's calling me into a life of ministry." And they'd say, "You got to be fucking joking. I'd say, I know. It's crazy, isn't it? They said, how do you do it? How do you do it, Vanessa? And I say, well, I don't know. Can I actually practice with you? Because I've got to practice for a sermon that I've got to teach at Linfield Uniting Church. And I'd be in my spin class, teaching a spin class. Can I practice some of it? Oh, would you please? That's hilarious. And I would actually, in my 6:15 spin class on a Monday morning, practice what I was going to be preaching the following week at church while I was learning, and they would kill themselves in hysterics. So you don't really say it like that in the pulpit, do you, Ness? And I say, well, I don't know how else to bloody say it, mate. Just got to keep it real. And I was doing it back then, and they would say to me things like this, good Catholics often, or Anglicans, and they would say, you know what? I'd come to your church. I say, oh, that's a long way off, brother. That's a long way off. But I'll keep you to that, maybe, you know. And so I just authentically shared my stories of God and Jesus and my stories of the Bible conversationally and pastorally. I didn't have to learn how to do that. That was just how I was as a person. So there was no formal training for that piece of who I am in the workplace. But it really, I think, shaped me and my business enterprise in a large way. And I believe that God blessed that, because I was in business for 33 years, John T, and it was only in July this year that my business folded, and I'm now 100% of the time, with no distraction whatsoever, in ministry life. Mm.
33 years, I can't even, like, I'm 24. I can't wrap, I mean, I can, but it's difficult for me to wrap my head around doing something for that long.
Mm. Can I share one more story?
Yeah, go for it, yeah, before I, because I got some follow-up questions.
I know you've got some questions. Yeah. I just want to tell you this other story, which is absolutely amazing. This woman was, she was an exercise specialist, and she was working with me, and she was one of my, on my team. And at that time, you know, in a previous podcast I'd shared about having an abortion.
Yeah.
So I was now in my 30s, and I'd had my abortion back in my very early 20s. And this girl was working for me, and she was young, and I loved her so much. She was just absolutely top of her game and the most magnificent chick. Anyway, I used to talk about Jesus at work because that's just how I be me. And she said to me, Ness, I need to book time to see you. I said, of course, babe, let's book some time in. So we had time together, and she said, I just need to tell you I'm pregnant and I don't know what to do about it. And I said, oh, well, honey, I'll support you. You know, you take mat leave. And I went into a HR mode and said, well, you'll do this, this and this, and then you can come back to work if you want to, and et cetera. She said, no, it's not about that. I think I want to have an abortion. And I said, okay, right. Can I share a story with you? And she said, yeah, please. I said, I've had an abortion. She said, oh, really? What was that like? And I shared with her that story, my story. And I said to her, and she said, would you do it again? And I said, no, I would not do it again, because I've spent the last 9 years in therapy dealing with that and completely unraveling, and the pain and guilt and shame that I feel in regards to that is just horrendous. Anyway, I just shared how it was, and I talked about, you know, God and Jesus and being saved and forgiveness and healing, and I was on that journey. Anyway, she ended up leaving working with me as she went on, because she ended up getting heavily pregnant. She had that baby. After she had that baby and she was raised that child as a single mum, she reached out to me and she said to me how grateful she was that I shared my story with her in the workplace, because now she has this exquisite daughter. And if it wasn't for my honest sharing about God and how I felt about abortion, she wouldn't have this gorgeous daughter now. That gorgeous daughter's in her late 20s now, and they're both Christians. And I think to myself, oh, if I die now, it's all okay.
That's awesome. That's so cool.
Isn't that? I can't do these podcasts without a bloody cry, Jonty. I am so useless.
But I think, like, as someone who's like super, super into like books and movies and stories and narrative, I really do like the power of stories, and because it when you hear someone else tell their story, often it isn't actually about you attaching to the other person's story. It's about feeling heard in your own story through finding common ground in other people's stories and feeling then the freedom to express your own story and your own truth through that.
And with no judgment.
And feeling validated.
Yeah, that's right.
Know, we all go through the same shit.
Yeah,
it's actually okay that we don't have it all under control because no one does.
That's right.
Yeah.
Gee, we like to think we do though, don't we?
Oh, we convince ourselves that we do.
Yeah.
That's how we get through the day often.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
We got it all under control. Often we don't. No. No, that's fine. Mm. Almost no one has it all under control. And yeah, I think, through telling, I mean, I think that's partly what the point of this podcast is. It's just us sharing stories like that.
I had a woman, have I got time for one more?
Of course. Yeah, absolutely.
During COVID, it was a really particularly heavy time, that first COVID lockdown, and corporates were really struggling. And there was a woman that reached out to me who was one of my clients, and the most amazing chick. I love this woman. I've known her for 20 years. And she was experiencing domestic violence at home in the COVID lockdown. And I had the privilege of being able to pastorally care for her in that time and to help support her as she extricated herself from that unsafe unsafe work life and home life, and then to the point where she had to hide and get some police protection. And I think, and then I pastorally cared for her during that period of time, which was a really bloody intense thing because I couldn't even go and be with her because I was in lockdown myself and unable to leave my area. We're in that radius issue at that time. Do you remember that? And we're all locked down.
Yeah.
She was able to leave because of her dire situation, and I was one of very few people other than her mum who knew where she was actually staying with her kids. And I think that's pastoral care in the workplace, and that's sharing my faith and praying with her overtly over the phone and on Zoom at that time. And I used to say at J&J that I was more like, I think in the early days I was very much medical exercise specialist in the workspace, entrepreneurial in how I did what I did and corporate gyms and all the great gym stuff that I did do, which was really revolutionary, and there's been many papers written on the Live for Life program and the work that I did in the corporate sector. And it was really modern and cutting edge of the day. And even the work health safety stuff I was involved in my company. But I think the stuff that I did that was the best stuff was the corporate chaplaincy, as I call it. And I don't even think corporate chaplaincy was a thing back then. But that's what I coined it. And it was funny, you know, Jonty, God said to me when he called me, he said to me these words, corporate prison chaplaincy shape mold 3 years. And I was already working in the corporate sector, and I think I immediately thought, oh, that's my J&J connection, the corporate piece. Maybe God wants me to stay in corporate as in ministry. I don't know. I was trying to work all that out. But I think now, as I'm through part of that journey, that it was definitely corporate chaplaincy. And I was, and that was to last as long as God wanted that to last for. And I just diligently did that until God didn't want me to do that anymore. And that became evident earlier this year. So really amazing and just an extraordinary journey of faith in the workplace. I've got so many stories I could go for hours, really.
Yeah, we'll have to do a part two.
That's enough, though.
Dip into it. I have a couple of questions to finish us off before we do gratitude. You sort of you alluded to this earlier, but like one of the questions I have when we talk to guests about this topic is, do you feel like you've ever been treated differently in the workplace because of your faith? And you mentioned a couple of times that you felt like the fact that you were a Christian actually was a positive trait that reflected on clients and was a thing that was visible in a positive way. Do you have any experiences of it being the other way around? Like, have you had conflict or like reservations about you being a Christian at work? And
yeah, definitely. At the end it was because I think I'd been in business for a very long time and I had a lot of executive support in what I was doing. They liked the way that I did what I did. They got to see from a HR perspective the impact that I would call it my ministry, but it was my business. And the people that I employed in the business, I had a lot of Christians that worked with me in the business, how that helped support, nurture and care for the people in the workspace. And they saw it as really positive and a wonderful thing. And they, in an inclusive world, they didn't have to call it corporate chaplaincy. They could call it the gym, right? And that got a massive green tick. Then there was a change of leadership, big change of leadership in my workspace. And I noticed those people were less supportive of my style. And I wonder, so the style of exercise specialty and personal training is like the body's the body, mate. Lat pull down's a lat pull down. There's, you know, squat's a squat. Movement patterns are movement patterns. our body's biology has not changed in a very long time. So the way we execute movement patterns is the way we do it. So not much has changed in that space. And we're still running really modern expressions of exercise and how we do things, staying at the top of our game there. But what changed was the management structure and I think their desire to not give a shit about the spiritual life or the emotional life and the well-being of their employees. I think they'd beg to differ and probably be quite upset with me saying that, but I think that I saw that happen. And it's just a trimming down, I suppose, of corporates. They have to trim in different areas and COVID came and changed how we saw things in the corporate setting, and they ended up going with another provider who could just provide exercise specialty with none of the other special bits, as I call it.
and the last question I have is to do with like work-life balance, and you could answer this in regards to the health and gym and fitness space, but also maybe what you're doing now in ministry, because you know, we have similar experiences having worked as a children and youth worker for a number of years, and then now here working with you. And I think it's pretty universal, working in a church, expectations of employees go much further than 9 to 5. How have you found over the years, maybe comparing and contrasting what it was like in corporate to now, in maintaining whether it's family or friends or spiritual? Like, that's actually, I'll put a button in. I was going to ask how you balance your spiritual life with work now that you're, but I'll put a button, we can do that another time. But maybe work-life balance, how's that? Have you found that changing or the same with the change of career, and how do you maintain those things?
I'm really shit at it, Jonty. When I first became a minister, I was at MLC school, and pastoral care happened in 45-minute slots in school between 7:30 a.m. and 3:15 p.m. and there was no bleed over into my personal life because children are not allowed to communicate with you outside.
Yep.
I hadn't realised what a blessing that really was. And then there's school holidays and they can't contact you, and while the rigour of the school day was freaking intense. When I left school, and I just, all I had to do was prepare for the next day. I didn't have to, the pastoral load didn't come with me. It was a little bit like that in the corporate world as well. Once it was outside those gym hours, that was running from 6 a.m. to like 6:30 p.m., they were long days. But once it was over, it was over. Mm. And it didn't bleed outside. As you well know, in the church, it's a very different thing. And I am still getting my head around that. And I'm not very good at it because I want to help the world. And as my supervisor says to me, Peter says to me, Vanessa, you're going to burn yourself out, love. Put your tits back in your bra. Stop breastfeeding the world. And I think I just want to breastfeed the world. That's the thing. It's innately who I am, but it's going to kill me. I've got to get better boundaries around that stuff because I don't like saying no, Jonty. Mm. If somebody's in need, I want to be there to help them. So I find that particularly hard and I'm not good at it. And at times I really struggle because I don't like if somebody's ringing me at 10:30 at night and I have a couple of people that do that, I want to ring them back or I want to pick up the call, even if I'm asleep. I want to pick up the call because they might need something. Mm. But then I'll be awake till 1 a.m. because then I'll be thinking about it and I'm not going to get any sleep and I've got to be up at the crack of dawn because I've got to come and do another work day. And so I've got to get better at that. So to answer your question, I need help. So if anybody's out there that can help me with that, I'm up for it.
It's really hard and especially like the way that pay works in the church as well with the different structures of how you get paid for the work that you do. Mm. Like on the one hand, different people are paid more of a salary for the hours that they do. Mm. But even then, it's still really difficult because your hours are flexible and things come up and it's like, oh, it's 9:30 on a Friday night and the edit needs to be redone for online church because someone's unhappy with something and it just has to be done, right?
Yeah.
But then like the other element of that is if you're like yourself, we don't have to go into the details, but with the stipend thing, which in technicality isn't a salary, that's a allowance that frees you from having to work so that you can devote your life to ministry, which then removes all ability to say, well, no, my work hours are no longer at this time and so you can't contact me because I'm no longer at work, because by the nature of the job description, you're kind of freeing yourself from those restraints to be able to minister to your community.
Correct.
Which makes it almost impossible, I think. Mm. That's why I have a lot of respect for people like you who can do that.
I just told you in the other sentence, I don't do it well at all.
That you are doing it at all, I think it blows my mind that people have the ability to commit themselves to that. But at the same time, I recognise that it is very difficult.
This is funny. In the Uniting Church, we've got this thing where, and I don't fully understand it, but we can allot our day into certain sections.
Yep.
Like there's a morning to lunchtime amounts of time that we allot, then there's an afternoon section, then there's an evening section because we often do meetings into the night. I can't work that shit out, brother. I just go, well, I've got a to-do list. I've worked in corporate for 33 years. You just work. You wake up, you start the gig, and then you go until the majority of the list is complete.
I used to, in my previous job, I was on at different times between 16 and 20 hours a week.
Mm.
So that's not full time, very much not full time. Mm. So being able to manage that, I was actually told, like, we need to break it up into morning and afternoon chunks.
That's right.
Like almost like,
what they say,
like quarters, and you need to break it up into whatever, and you need to decide if each chunk is X number of hours, you're going to work this day in a morning and this day in an afternoon, and then outside of that, you just don't show up, which is easy to say when you're only working part time. But there's I don't know if listeners may know there's an awesome podcast called the Imperfects. They're an Australian podcast, and there was a really, really great author that I really like, we might talk about on this podcast sometime, called Johan Hari, who's written a number of books, but his current most recent book that he's still promoting is a book called Stolen Focus. Mm. And it's about focus and attention and things like that. But he was on The Imperfects talking about that, and he was actually in exactly this space. And I think I've told you this off mic. There are a couple of places. France is the most recent one that have actually, through lobbying from work like unions, there's now legislation in place that it is illegal for companies and workplaces to contact their workers outside of work hours, and like companies get fined hundreds of thousands of dollars for doing it. And I think in a place like Australia, where you know, culturally, there is this, you just work until you drop thing, and then you get pissed on a weekend, and then you do it again. It's kind of the not everyone falls into that, but that's a pretty common cultural idea of what work, how people engage with work. I think that would be really valuable, because it's not just a one person in their job can request, hey, can I be a little bit stricter with my boundaries, because it's an entire country, like it's a cultural thing.
It is.
So it's really difficult, which is why I've included in the questions that I want to ask everyone, because I struggle with it too.
Yeah,
I've always struggled with it. Like, how do you maintain that healthy balance?
And then I come into ministry with a lens of corporate living, and the way that you operate in the corporate sector is just, they take no prisoners, mate. You are either, and running your own business, it's just, you go until you don't anymore. Yep. So I come into ministry with this intense work ethic, and
which I can see every day that you just work insanely hard.
But it pisses me off when I, in the wider church, ministers that don't, I get, and that's really judgy. And it might be that they've just got better work-life balance and they've got really good boundaries, and I'm just shit at that. But I'm not built that way. I'm too old, and I'm just locked into it. Actually, you know what? I actually like it. There you go. I actually like working hard. I actually like how it makes me feel, until it doesn't.
Until burnout arrives. Yeah.
Until I'm so buggered.
Yeah.
And then I go, oh, and then I've just got to stop for a bit.
Yeah.
And I think I had a bad pattern in the past of I'd go and go and go, and then I might get sick, end up running myself down, and might be sore throat, runny nose, and have to a couple of days off because I was just so unwell. And so I've got to guard myself, because you can't do that in ministry. That's not a gig.
Yeah. No, I've had similar things where, like, I was working part-time, but I'm running a youth camp, for example. Right. And that's – like, how do you break down, like, is that 4 days of 24-hour non-stop work when you're on camp?
Right.
Or is that where you're volunteering? Or, and so you get to the end of that and you're just, like, you're a wreck.
Oh,
like,
that's,
I got physically ill and was just exhausted.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's tough.
It's really tough.
Yeah. Thanks for sharing.
My pleasure. Thanks for asking the questions.
That was really interesting. There was not a lot of work I had to do for this one. It was just over to you, so that was fantastic. Let's do gratitude to wrap up.
Yeah, okay. Have we got music for gratitude?
Yeah.
Can you play it now?
I'll play it now.
Grateful for Jonty, and I've only just reflected on this as early as yesterday. Makes me want to cry. I'm going to cry again. Is that I'm so grateful that I had the opportunity and that God trusted me so much to be able to influence lives the way that I was able to in the corporate setting. It was an absolute blessing, and I believe I did a 33-year internship to learn how to be a minister. Because I learned a lot about ministry through under the guise of medical exercise specialty, because I learned how to be with people, how to love people, and I'm so grateful for Johnson & Johnson and how they loved me and cared for me, and they loved the business model that I brought to the table for so long, and I'll be forever grateful for them for that, because it was just it. Was incredible.
Life 33 experience. Years.
Yeah, it was a long time. Yeah. Absolutely. And God got to use me in a really dynamic way, and I just hope God uses me in a dynamic way in the church like he did there. Because I'm still finding my way as a minister, still trying to work it out. I feel like a shit minister. I'm a better medical exercise specialist than I am a minister. There'll be a tipping point, though, I reckon, at some point. I'll get better at that.
Yeah. Oh, look, any minister, male or female, that says they got it all figured out, I'm immediately sceptical of. I'm like, no, you don't.
Oh, my God. We interviewed beautiful Dr. Michael Jensen yesterday, and that dude sat in this chair and he's so got his shit together. He's such a grown up. He's so proper, and I just wonder if I'm ever going to be like that, Jonty.
You don't need to. He already exists. You don't need to be Michael. Michael can be Michael. You're a mess.
It's impressive, though.
Yeah, no, he's fantastic. Yeah, thanks for sharing.
Pleasure.
Yeah, that gives you a little taster. We've got Michael Jensen coming up in a couple of weeks. Next week, I'm going to be chatting to my brother.
Yes.
About music.
Can't wait to hear that one.
That was cool. We didn't even feel like a podcast. We just sat down and chatted. Yeah, so we've got those coming up. Yeah, I'm Jonty.
I'm Ness.
This is Filthy Hope. See you next week.
Thanks for listening. Once again, if you want to support this podcast, leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or just a positive review on whatever platform you listen to us on. Next week, we won't be talking to my brother. We'll actually be talking to Rachel Collis, whose new double album, Mayfly, is now out exclusively on her website, rachelcollis.com. We're going to be talking about all things music and artistry, as well as how faith interacts with creativity. Go and buy the album for homework, or go and check out her back catalogue. There's a wealth of great music waiting for you to discover it. Find us on socials or join the private Facebook group that's linked down below to engage with us on a more personal level. If you want to get in touch, send us questions, stories, or vent centrals, you can email us at filthyhopepod@gmail.com. We'll see you next week, and until then, take Jesus seriously and don't be a dick.